Yeah. So topics, areas of areas of deep ecological concern.
I have to have some speeches, right? So I think I'm gonna give a persuasive speech on free will or the lack thereof.
Well done.
I think I'm gonna fuck them all class.
Well, that'll get that'll arouse the muggles in the class, right? To what extent are you going to plagiarize some of the experts that you've read? Or are you just going to wing it?
Plagiarizing the whole thing.
Excellent.
Well,
well
I mean,
done.
It's all, like, how much is there really to talk about, you know? Like, you just talk about, like, the famous guy who killed his whole family while on a shooting spree.
Uh-huh.
And he left a note and it said, like, you know, check my head out because I didn't used to be like this, but the violent urges have become overwhelming. I have to act on them.
Oh my God!
And they, of course, he found like you know a tumor, like pressing on his amygdala.
Uh huh.
And it's like, okay, well, is he really like responsible?
Yeah.
And then you can talk about the other stuff. That's like you know, smell of garbage makes you vote more conservative.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
What does the smell of baby poop do?
Makes you
accelerates your awakening. That's why we spread it around.
That's right. Yeah, it's young, you know, early life, you know, effortlessly. Yeah.
It just brings source. Out your childlike nature so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, I remember that smell.
I think it's like judges too. You know, before lunch, convict like 30% more people.
Judges before lunch.
Yeah, if they're hungry, they convict.
Yeah,
like
30% let's get this over with.
Holy shit.
That's what I would do. Snack time.
It's like don't guilty. Buy a Ford made on a Monday or a Friday or something.
Yeah, so hit some of the basic scientific research and then go into the more, you know, philosophical, you know, search in your own experience type look and then talk uh-huh. about, you know, basic like getting lost in a movie.
Right.
The car almost hitting you, basically merging stuff. And then,
uh-huh.
yeah, that sums up most of it.
That's good.
Yeah.
And as part of the talk, will you take questions from the audience?
Yeah, I'll have to ask if I'm allowed to do that, but I'd be curious to see, like, what type of, I don't know what I'm looking for is by people's objections, because I don't think it's going to, like, go over too easily. You know?
No.
I heard Nan recently. Wasn't she just talking about, she heard someone speak about freedom?
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. The author, yeah, some author, something or other, I don't know. I don't retain too much.
I just fell asleep while talking. Oh, what happened?
Very interesting. Whatever.
Well, the, you know, the...
You got something to say, Jeffy?
Huh?
Wait, don't smell like baby shit up here now. It didn't used to.
I didn't smell it.
She smells everything.
Close the door.
Close the door. Is that...
I smell... What
the hell?
But
I guess baby poop is just so robust that,
bad.
You know.
Yeah, it could be from out there if there's a vegetable or anything.
I'm sure those cribs will stink forever. I mean,
yeah.
Okay. So it's
saturated. There's a germ festival in here.
It sure is.
But free will.
Yes.
When you slow down and you watch the oncoming, you know, when you see the thoughts coming in, you not see them, but you.
Yeah.
Sense the thoughts coming in like that's like cusp of, you know, like it's one of the things to look at when it comes to the question of reading.
I'm expecting two or three people to have flashes of enlightenment right in front of the speech.
Let's
yeah,
hope
you
so.
Should just go in her Sagadana and like smoke BDs and just yell at them and be like, where the fuck do you think you are?
You don't exist.
Who are you people?
Yeah, if you pass BDs around, it's gonna be a win.
Blow smoke in their face. Paint your face like little, you know, Indian guys.
I'm sure, like any of you, you know, we've all had our fair share of encounters with people that become vociferous and reject the slightest suggestion of the absence of free will.
It was people like really saying there as they were like writing him. Saying, like, you have taken control of my mind, like, I have to kill you now.
Oh, yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
Like, you
yeah. Yeah, you don't want, so you want to try to avoid that. You don't want to have, like, a fatwa on your fat head.
As long as 50% of their class is on my side. We'll be all right.
You'll be fine. Yeah. Well, huh.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot there, I know.
No, it's good. People, if there are any, that might not feel so great about things if they ever do or don't, are typically motivated to feel better about things. The average, Buddhist or yogi or muggle who might not go anywhere near contemplation or anything like that. The impulse is to supplicate or manage the disgruntlement and the suffering or disquietude, restlessness that's coming up, by attempting to manipulate either the external circumstances or to manipulate the internal atmosphere to suffer less. That's the right, the basic thing there is to suffer less. And whatever resources you may be acquainted with to suffer less, you'll use them.
What I do all the time.
Okay, you're not alone, right? Now, the maybe along the way you've been successful on occasion. Maybe on occasion you haven't made a dent in whatever disquietude is present. And then you have time heals all wounds as a fallback. no one or very few people, if there are any people, you could say voluntarily sign up for a depersonalization event. Wishing to suffer less is certainly understandable. Who couldn't relate to that? But taking it a step further to cultivate or articulate or lean into the remote possibility that you might conjure or be the beneficiary of a depersonalization event. That's different.
That's supposed to be like the ultimate end of suffering, huh? There's nobody to name a bitch.
Yes, that's the... When you read about enlightenment events in the various books and memoirs and websites where you can find those kinds of stories, typically what you're reading about, the catharsis of so-called enlightenment, is the trigger or presence of a depersonalization event. The reflex of being local and my own. It's the localization of experiencing, which conjures what we might refer to as individuated consciousness. That individuated consciousness is wise to suffer less through whatever means it has at its disposal, according to karma, socioeconomic opportunities, proclivity, education, nature, nurture, drugs at hand, minds with ordinary and remarkable people, right? A million things that happen that serendipitously occur in your so-called life. That kind of dictate the resources at your disposal to suffer less. And even, you know, people with good health and family networks and money don't necessarily suffer less. They just, you know, suffer, let's say, differently.
This one's to take you out. Doesn't care. You've got the best health care and the most money.
Yeah. So you can say few and far between seekers, even, you know, rabid, sincere, earnest seekers are vying for a depersonalization event. Even though we may be craving it. Since the reflex of personalization is so strong, even a warm, fuzzy feeling for realization, let's say, I could argue is still another symptom of suffering less.
I don't even know what, like, suffering less, I'm just like, all I can think of is winning for the muggle, really.
Okay.
Because, you know, usually you just think you're suffering because you're not winning according to some bizarre environmental condition, whether internal or external, that you...
Yes.
Isn't going your way or whatever.
Yes, the geometry of what we would call suffering and the way that it comes about environmentally, socially, financially, sexually, attention-seeking, what security, right? All the ways that we can feel vulnerable, at risk, and not having our fair share of the spoils of living. And then, of course, you know, there's a more widespread issues, for instance, like climate change and hurricanes and typhoons and droughts and auspicious fires and things that are happening, you know, with maybe greater frequency and intensity around the so-called world. Yeah. You know, all the headlines tracking Harvey and Irma and Katya and Jose or Jimenez, whatever these storm systems are, the fire in Oregon or recently in Los Angeles. You know, you're not seeing any mention there of the Paris Climate Accords or, you know, even Al Gore's name or, right? It's just reporting on the symptoms of these geophysical, large-scale geophysical events. I mean, Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, is a fairly avid climate denier. Yeah. And here comes a hurricane right up his ass. Yeah. I'm talking about you, Rick.
I'm sure he's watching.
I'm sure he's, yeah, he's, yep, yep. Rick Scott, he's right there in the chat room.
I can't really know what's true there.
No, I'm not suggesting you can. We're just another way to suffer. Losing your house, your dog, everything in it, your family.
Oh, damn.
Family gets whisked away in a van. Yeah. But it might turn out that rather than, let's say, waiting around passively in hopes for a depersonalization event to occur, you can actually lean into it.
Yeah, I read this YouTube comment like 10 years ago at least.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I don't know, somebody's video, and it was something like, I was enlightened before I was born. I'll be enlightened after I'm dead, so I just sit here playing my guitar.
Cool.
Something really struck me about that is just, I don't know, not the most judicious life. Just a judicious way to use your life.
you don't know if he was chopping wood and carrying water, right? Or make and do with the, you know, the in-between of his enlightenment pre-birth and post-death. Yeah.
Hopefully for him that assertion was true.
Yes, for hopefully yes. Hi.
Oh, yeah, did you read the Wayne Weir thing, right?
Yes.
That guy's website, man, like, I mean, I get it. Like, if you're in a lot of pain, you want to off yourself, like, all right, but, I mean, just, like, make it like it's some spiritual journey to, like, go back and, like, I don't know, it just seemed a bit weird.
My sense of Wayne following him very, very casually and sporadically.
First experience with him.
I was aware of him before, but I didn't like him then, so I didn't never really followed him too much.
Yeah.
His stuff seemed to be way too much about Wayne.
Ninth level of this and that, right in the thumb.
Right. Nice, dude. So, you know, you start getting into cosmologies and distractions. Because when you get her done, you know, realization is you could argue a lot less than anything Wayne had to say about it. You know, personification is a myth. Apparently durable. But it's really quite the myth.
He was so sure about this whole thing about coming back, and I only read some of it, but you know, like, okay, well, see you next visit.
Yeah, I'll check every hiney I can get my hands on for that birthmark.
All right, I scanned it.
Yeah.
I remember
being about. I was going to think, like, man, like the Mormons, they might be right. You might end up in Mormon hell for killing yourself, dude. You don't know what happens next.
Oh boy, whoa. I hope he emails. Don't do it. Kids, don't do it. I'm really sorry. I'm in Mormon hell. And that's bad.
Forever?
Forever.
Hell forever. Would be bad.
Yeah, Mormon hell is forever.
That would be really bad.
That would be so bad. That'd be like worse than bad Quaker.
Yeah, like if that was the actual like current societal threat, I would probably be good. I'd be like, just in case. I don't know.
Yeah, really. I don't want to mess with that one.
Like fire red guy, that's okay. But
yeah, fire red guy, I could handle. Mormon hell, I'm out of here, man. Can't do it. Yeah, so I don't know. There's nothing going on. There's really nothing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that's happening, but there's nothing that's not happening. There's no point in really investing in some kind of cosmology or explanation as to why there's suffering or there's not suffering. And there's even less of a point of, you know, trying to hammer the, you know, the possibility of doing anything about anything. You're screwed. That's that. That's where these teachings go. They really do. You negotiate right, pleasantly and creatively, if not assertively, with whose ever mind is, let's say, shows up and has things to say, right? Things to do, things to explain, things to practice, things. And that's, right, that's the movement of persona. It's a stream of objects found, accompanied by, right, loquacious narrative, all of which is, you could say, occurring in the bubble of far too local identification. So then everything that's appearing in, you could say, the field or texture of reality is felt and seen and responded to through the lens of personification, individuation. The language, right? The culture, the money, the food, right? The brands, the hyper-acceleration of digitization.
And I was thinking about another topic.
Which is more about just faster exploitation. That's all. It's just.
That's right. Exploitation running faster.
We need to make this faster. Yeah. Let's go wireless.
Cha-ching. Cha-ching, yeah. What was the other topic?
Oh, I was going to talk about humanity ending AI. Over digitization. I thought that'd be interesting.
Do you see the movie Life? It's not AI, but it's like totally alien all over again. You're like, I couldn't watch it because I was like, what, they're going to do this again where they're like in a lab and they get a little life form from Mars.
Oh, right.
And then that thing is insane.
Yeah, yeah, it's hungry.
It's hungry and it's insane and it's fast. And yeah. It can like, yep, it withstand like some amount of radiation that, you know, just hangs out around outside the ship, inside. It's like just insane.
Yeah, yeah. They think they've found something.
And it manages, it wipes
them out.
It manages to get, despite all their efforts, just a lot of efforts, it manages to get back there without any of the humans.
Oh, right. It comes back, yeah.
So no one knows, you know.
That's the end
of
the movie.
Open the thing and it's like,
that's over now.
That's it.
Yeah.
Calvin.
Way cool. So how was it able to dispatch people? Was it a viral kind of thing?
Oh, no, it was like this weird, well, it was one little thing at first, but it, like in each cell it contained the entire organism.
Yeah, yeah.
So like
holographic evil.
It grew so fast.
I see.
So it started out as this little thing, then turned into like this four-legged kind of jellyfish, and then it turned into more like a dragon look. It just kept
morphing.
Morphing and
getting bigger.
And it just wrapped itself around any kind of mammal real tight and like ate you from the inside.
It had an appetite for human flesh.
Yeah, well, it's basically just looking for oxygen, carbon,
You know. Right, right, okay.
Those things.
Right, so its insatiability was elemental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just elementally feeling its way through whatever. And,
far out.
You know, I mean, that's to the extent that it was.
We're the same.
Portrayed, you know.
We're that too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this life form has done.
Yeah, we do exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. Carbon.
What do we expect? Right. They're like, find some life form that's just like
carbon,
randomly
gold,
like,
lime, flesh. Where?
Yeah, like what does bacteria do? It's not like
same.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
Welcome to Earth.
Right. You know? Yeah. I'm gonna fucking eat you. Okay.
Oh, good to see you.
Yeah, really nice. Welcome to our planet.
I'm gonna fucking eat you.
And it was really tough, huh? They hadn't figured out how to intervene in its life force. They didn't know how to take it out.
Yeah, they blasted it with like a shitload of radiation. Didn't give a shit about anything. It was just like, what?
Yeah, what? Just call me Max. Max the Assimilator. Yeah, that's cool.
funny because I've been watching the TV show The Expanse. It's like literally the same thing.
Is it?
It's like random alien life form shows up and it's just like just gets larger, like real quickly.
Uh huh. Larger.
Like morphs and other shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Morphs. Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not killed by the same things we're killed by, so, like, none of our shit
works.
Yeah,
that's right. You'd have to pee on it or something, and it's like, oh, I'm melting! Yeah, just a little uric acid, it's like, takes it right out.
Yeah, right, who knows? That's how you figure out what it is.
Exactly, it's not like game quality. The special effects aren't bad, but the plot is just unbelievably perfect.
Hi, Steven. See you in the chat room. Okay, so where were we? Nowhere special?
Digitization, aliens.
Good. Good leaping points.
Flesh-eating stuff.
Flesh-eating, good, good. Very good. The tenacity of is legend. Now, someone that doesn't commit themselves to any kind of, you know, contemplative exercises won't necessarily see the tenacity of individuation because they won't have the benefit of any kind of contrast. But for some reason, if one does embark on a contemplative arc of some kind, then you're treated to, and I would say early on even, right? Not 12 years in a cave. I mean, pretty early on, if you even commit yourself casually to a contemplative adventure, you will have some contrast. You will discover, even if it's kind of subtle, you know, moments of dispassion, moments of discontinuity, mini strokes.
They're totally mini-strokes.
Mini-strokes.
Bizarre. It's like everything freezes. You're just like, what the fuck?
And those mini-strokes, which come fairly generously, will inform you, and maybe not quite consciously in the beginning, but you're informed of discontinuity of self. You don't know if it's real. If it actually happened or not, because they tend to be rather brief, whether it'll happen again, whether your breathing or your posture or your incense or the time of day or your diet or your morning elimination might have had anything at all to do with it. And sometimes those, if once they do become conscious, a little later on in your contemplative adventure, you actually become sufficiently conscious of the gifts of discontinuity that now you're more avidly fascinated with them. They start to become more real than fleeting things you don't have any context for. So it's as that occurs, then there's a higher degree of discernment then between individuation, which is somnambulism, and release from it. And you know, if that is let's just say your karmic predilection, if that's your appointment, well, you know, you're a seeker. Now you're a seeker. You have to be, because you've discovered something that's it's just not mentioned at all in the media, rarely if ever. It might be played with in certain science fiction, you know, kinds of films and books and
not
stuff.
Not even really much.
Your parents don't know dick about it, probably.
No.
Right? Well, your siblings.
You educated my parents, so.
Well, that's unusual. And so you're really, I mean, you are on your own in many respects. And the tendency then is to become institutionalized. I don't mean going into a crazy house. I mean going to a Buddhist sangha. I mean, that kind of institution. You're still out on the streets, but now you belong to a church or a sangha or a yoga group or a chanting thing or a meetup or waking down in mutuality or come to this fucking meeting, right? So to gravitate toward like-minded inmates, well, we typically might move into some kind of, you know, institutional setting, even very casual ones, or worse, you know, like Thich Nhat Hanh or something. That's a more foreboding institutional venue for enlightenment seeking.
Something that has the promise of expansion.
Yeah. But even, you know, like the Tibetan place up in Washington, New Jersey, and places like that all over the place. Wow. You don't get what I would consider meaningful, demystified conversation and articulation when it comes to the heart of the teachings, which is the depersonalization event.
You know, interestingly, I think that people find that people that are very conventional wouldn't think of meditating, because that would be like, I don't know about that. You're setting yourself up for the devil or something like that.
But
they'll go to a church and they'll, I mean, these cathedrals that we saw are just unbelievable.
Oh.
The lighting is, you know, it's huge.
Uh-huh.
They got this organ. I mean, you can imagine the effect that has.
Yeah.
And the whole ritual. I mean, it takes people, and I determined this just by, you know, knowing people that get into this stuff, takes them to a different place, but it's sort of okay because that's, you know, sanctioned.
Yes.
And that's like the best they got.
Yeah, which isn't half bad.
It's okay. You know, at least it's something.
Something.
Their rational mind puts it in a box, and this is for this, and, you know.
You don't get a mega church for no reason.
Yeah. But, you know, they certainly limit themselves, you know, by their narrow frame of reference. So.
There's the curious scale of interest, impact, thirst, hunger, adventuresomeness, when it comes to the pursuit and or cultivation of the cessation of personalization. You know, at various meditation cathedrals, IMS and others, you know, the kind of the one of the go-to phrases is enlightenment is an accident and meditation makes you more accident prone.
Rick Archer, where are you at?
That's right.
Is that one of his go-to things?
No.
Yeah, okay, right. So that's, you know, that's been around for a while. It's hard to know who to credit for.
Oh, we know who ruined it.
Who ruined it? Rick ruined it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe it was Jack or Joseph or one of those IMS guys. I don't know. Could have been an old Tibetan thing, you know, that popped back up. Well, meditation is wonderful. I recommend it. No one asked me for my recommendation, so it doesn't matter what I say about anything. Thank goodness for that.
But it's still a thing you do. You know?
Yes.
It's a thing. Oh, okay, I'm going to meditate.
Whatever.
You got to do something. If you're going to will, if you're going to use what you take to be will to do something, you do it on the
way. That's right. You know, you do what you do at your disposal, whatever enthralls and calls to you. Yeah.
It just seems to me that to put a lot of stock in that and to, like, elevate yourself because of that or to... to have particular expectations because of it. And it's like everything else.
This, right, this, the involuntary and impersonal nature of individuation, personification and individuation, is like this, you know, creature from outer space that assimilates everything. Calvin was what they called him, her, it, Calvin. So anything that shows up, the tendency to individualize and personify and name and claim, right, fetishizes everything and anything that appears in experience.
That was like the one guy who, you know, it was like his little baby. He was raising it, you know, and it was the first one that he broke his hand and just ripped it off. And he's like, realized later, Calvin doesn't hate us. He's just, that's what life does. He's just looking for carbon, you know.
That's, yeah, he doesn't mean anybody harm.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, I just a carbon assimilator. You've got carbon, you're mine. Kind of a lovemaking event, actually, even though it kills you. But good lovemaking should probably kill you.
Making space with an alien.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Calvin. So if it's very, very tricky and very slippery to attempt to parse what appears through the lens of personification and individuation, because you just end up with yourself or someone else in a vast argument field that has no limitation. I mean, it's an infinity of agreement and disagreement.
There's
morphing.
Going to be more data.
Yeah, morphing faster than
forever.
And so you'd really like to get your point across, but good luck. I have a point, and I would like to get it across, but no.
It has to go across the blood-brain-skin barrier.
Yeah, right, right, yes. underneath the fanfare, the pageantry of one so-called, you know, existence, life, enjoying, not enjoying, horrific or otherwise, making spiritual progress, cavorting with angels, going to the spirit group or whatever the fuck. Yeah. You could say the innate intelligence of depersonalization is, you know, stalking you. The cessation or collapse or quiescence of narrative, the quiescence of bargaining, setting a course, the contemplating the past, figuring out what to do with or about yourself, or with or about anyone or anything else, is all the, you know, the reverberation of individuation and personification seen through the lens of the localization of consciousness as body-mind. Yeah. And you could say it's, I don't know if it's hard to snap out of it. Would you say hard to snap out of it? No, when it starts to occur, it's like you wouldn't say it was hard to snap out of it. But if you're in that kind of stage where you're craving for a wider aperture and it's just not gifting you, then you could say, well, Jesus, well, it's so hard to snap out of myself. But from the perspective of that relaxation just beginning to kind of show up and inform you, where's the heart?
Read any books?
Yeah.
Need any new vocabulary?
Yeah. Right. So it's, I mean, it's like in every respect, anything spoken about either, you know, individuation or the release of individuation is not really all that true.
Yeah.
Which is maybe good news, because that flatlines Buddhism and flatlines Hinduism and Jainism and Sufism. It flatlines all cosmology and science and politics and economic theory.
Flatlines everything. It's like so bad for the person. Like the person yeah. is just like, just come on, just let me just at least be a person like on a world called Earth. Like that's just simple. We can just stay there. You know, that's easy, right? No. No.
Yeah.
Like, no. There's something.
You know, to seek or cultivate a cosmology or a reference system that then places you in some kind of hierarchical condition as to how close or how far, how right, how left, how high, how low, is the myth of personification.
That's why you want to keep at least something in there, like even if it's just real far back, like the Big Bang, you can still kind of just start going. You could start plotting a course from there. You could do something.
Yeah.
There's some stuff.
Ouch. Yes.
If there's nothing, you're like swimming in a gluey paste of paint.
And then, you know, on a trajectory of some kind of mindfulness or whatever, you know, hot pursuit of enlightenment, all kinds of symptoms and fits and starts and shoots and ladders in the rhythm of your so-called life, as things do. And one will typically place varying degrees of emphasis on all of this perturbation of, you know, my personality, my persona, my upbringing, my socialization, my socioeconomic class, you know, the misery of my, you know, white and male privilege, whatever privilege you may be suffering from, or whatever victimization you may be suffering from. We're bad. Humans are fucking stupid. We're just bad.
Consciousness is like fucking just, it's
and you,
crazy. And it doesn't care. It's just like whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like Sven or that's no, that's Sven. It's like Arnold. What was his name? Sure. Maxwell, the alien guy. Randolph.
What's going on?
Consciousness.
Who are you people?
Consciousness is bad. It's bad for you.
It's really bad.
It's bad and it's bad for you. We're insatiable for more consciousness.
Consciousness has to be insatiable for more of itself. Like that.
No question about it.
Why would something create, like, imaginary stability and then, like, novelty so I could get excited about this news? You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
What would you do if you were all alone?
I know, right? I mean, it's like playing solitaire.
Yeah,
like, all right,
yeah, I think... Yes.
Why do you play solitaire with yourself?
I think the entire universe is just a bad game of free cell. Spider solitaire in 40 million suits. Now, it could be frightening and intimidating to the average aspirant. to lose sight of reference and preference. To feel reference and preference departing from the likes of you.
Well, especially when it's a rarity and it happens, I think it can be very fearful, you know.
Yes.
And threatening.
Yep.
But at some point, hopefully, with enough encounter and then whatever, it can be welcome.
Yes.
What I find intriguing is when consciousness goes beyond just, you know, the sensorium of one's existence,
uh-huh.
into wild and crazy stuff, you know, dreamlike stuff, or very, very highly specific stuff that a few
yes.
people
yeah.
Seem to have the, I don't know if I want to call it ability, capacity
yes.
to put forth, you know. And I don't know where it comes from. You know, is it some vibration coming from somewhere? What the hell it is?
Right.
Like the writers of, you know, all kinds of books and, you know, many religions and big religions. And, you know, I mean, where does all this shit come from?
Like the Food Network.
Well,
God, just this.
But
God,
there's at least a trail
with.
There. Like, the,
yeah, yeah.
Gotta make some food. Makes perfect sense.
Uh-huh. You mean like something like the Book of Urantia?
Yeah,
or
these, exactly.
You know, Pleiadian, Arcturian, et cetera's? Yeah, right, right. Entertaining cosmologies, yeah.
I don't get it, you know.
It's your basic mental illness, you know. It's a couple so wires crossed. And...
Well, that's... those are kind of a great... illustration of an amorphous, indeterminate, irresolvable, to quote steal Peter Brown's references, field of apparition can be made to be so remarkably specific
yeah.
and influential and full of implication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the very nature of this high pixelation that makes you think, oh, well, then it must be true.
Well, it's a chicken or the egg, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it the high pixelation? Is it the vibratory texture of, you know, high pixelation, which contributes to the ability to convert, you know, an amorphous what the fuck into a specific arcane, very weird cosmology, whether it's Pleiadian or Jim Jones? Whether it's the cult of Donald Trump or...
Well, it's the big bang at every...
Okay. Okay, yeah. Right. So all of that profusion. It truly, it's like chicken or egg. I mean, mind would like to find, you know, a cosmology that can be traced. And so that's another symptom of what we're referring to as, you know, individuated, localized consciousness, a reference field or a causation field that can be traced, but to disembodied freedom, there's no such thing, nor is there any craving for one.
For disembodied freedom?
Yeah.
Okay.
As another.
Out to lunch. There's nobody. There's no.
Yeah. It's just
no longer
disembodied freedom, suggesting, you know,
the entity does not exist.
Post depersonalization. Yeah.
Nothing like the old repersonalization.
Yes. Absolutely.
Short hiatus.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, and it just goes that way for as long as it goes that way. It really does. We'd like to think of maybe enlightenment or some kind of event, some kind of depersonalization event, being some kind of constant. And that we try to imagine ourselves or project ourselves into, how would my life look, how would my feelings, my persona, my relationships, my money, my whatever look, were I granted the gift of enlightenment.
And do I get back to that one little sweet spot or one time?
Yes. And so, again, we create another cosmology. Another cosmology is set in motion.
This is so good.
But, you know, it's like Ramana Maharshi didn't, you know, for that early part in his life, he sat in a cave somewhat unperturbed for way too long a time. But that's a bad example for... you know, average persons like ourselves vying for, you know, our fair share of the enlightenment pie.
I set the curve way too high.
Way too high.
So
it's like,
good. that.
Well, dude, you know, and I mean, I've seen people like myself, idiots, challenge other people on, if you haven't this, and if you haven't that, and if you haven't that, well, then you're not enlightened, because the Buddha knew his past lives, and he could, you know, he could draw wine from a stone, and, you know, so they got this whole list of all of these miraculous things that are the dictates and the barometer of enlightenment, and if you can't do any of that stuff, well, you know, fuck you.
Sounds like a Buddhist chat room.
It's bad. Yeah, that's exactly right. It sounds like a bad Quakers and a bunch in a Buddhist chat room. Yeah. Oh, God.
It's just a bunch of Muggles competing over superhero powers that they yes. have.
Yes, it's
what
super,
they wish they had.
Yes, it's superhero cultism. Mm. That's right. And so, you know, the so-called mystery in the life of the Buddha, or the Jesus story, or even the Nirsagadatta story, or Carl Renz, or whomever the fuck. Right?
Superman.
Can't help but to create an envy vector as the myth of personalization tries to place itself in the context of depersonalization. And then imagine that one lives with a certain kind of, what would you call it, lofty bliss unendingly. And again, that's those that language and that anticipation, sensual or sentimental, spiritual or emotional, psychological orientation is a myth.
And it's like really lowballing it, I think, because
it's very much lowballing it.
It gets like really trippy, and if you think that you're going to like stabilize something, it just keeps getting trippier, and it like kind of just gives you little bits. You're like, oh, this just keeps getting trippier and trippier, but it just is like the same shit, you know? It's like, okay,
yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, A, it has nothing to do with behavior, and B, never stable. Like, well, you wouldn't want it. It's not, stabilization is...
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. That's
a
bad idea.
Yeah.
I wonder what the specific differences are between
this
type of depersonalization and, like, the medical condition where there's still, like, some remnant of a person experiencing his life as not himself, which is, like, supposedly highly disturbing.
Very disturbing, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Great,
Can
I mean...
Can you venture a guess at the differences in experience?
No idea, really. Maybe, who knows? Maybe all the yoga and the meditation and all the Course in Miracles and all the shit that we do, in a way, are preparatory for sliding into deeper realms of depersonalization and being able to cope, being able to assimilate. That if it were to happen, you know, all of a sudden, it might not show up as a lovely surprise. Why should it?
Yeah.
Sometimes it appears to show up as a lovely surprise. And then you go straight to the loony bin. Right. Do not pass go straight to loony bin, social security disability. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you'll never have even heard of Adyashanti.
Nope.
Nope.
I know someone
that's just like that.
There definitely seems to be a connection, because there even is the other, like, sort of connected condition, derealization, where they report the same things, like, oh, like, life just seems like surreal, unreal, like it's like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be like the same thing that like other people report inside of this work, but with, again, just some added, like, not like. Terror, I guess, is not good.
Not good.
Yeah.
Well, we look at the loud, throbbing broadcasting of conformist reality and the expectations that it places upon
you. If you're measuring this to that, that's going to suck so bad.
And you have a depersonalization event that was right on schedule, but unscheduled, with no preparation for it. Yeah, it might not. You might not go, yes.
Yeah. No, I would have been happy with my life, winning, doing things, feeling good. Not yeah. like, I don't know, I think I was like narcoleptic for half the day.
Yeah.
Something happened.
But at the same time, that does seem like if there's somebody there freaking out, like that just seems like an out-of-place illusion, if you will.
Yes. If there's someone still remaining that is harboring a still tenacious association or identification with the biologic, with the sensual, with the mind, with the culture, with, you know, the language of conformist reality, then it can really, really, really suck.
I was going to say, yeah, this sort of seems like almost like a wires crossed or like a bungled, like, you know, unfocusing.
Yes.
It's like you have, like, you know, if you're sitting, like, fully in, like, normal, like, you know, mindset, like, there is, like, the sense of you that's, like, right there, but then, like, you can, like, unfocus from that, and there's, like, distance. But if you, like, unfocus from that, but then, like, the sense of you, like, sort of stayed, I guess how that could, like, probably cause some, I don't know, yeah, people would be freaked out.
Try it out.
I don't want to control any of these things.
Yeah, I know.
I don't
want to
try that really. That
yeah, that one I'll pass.
Experience is yeah. not what I'm looking for. Someone else's report on it will be good enough here.
Yeah. I mean, it would certainly be interesting to, you know, work with or interview or speak with either someone that's had the experience, is having it, or a therapist that has had some meaningful encounters with it.
But then, like, he went on to be, like, late afterwards.
I don't know.
I mean, does that person exist?
I don't know.
Put an ad in that little paper. You put an ad in.
I've never heard of a, you know, publicly available enlightenment story that matured into quiescence from the psychiatric depersonalization event.
But it could be like a depersonalization back to normal and then enlightenment.
Could be anything.
You don't need to, like, skip around.
You know, Jeannie Zandi prides herself on having a 5-year-long, you know, problem. You know, dark night of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 5 years is kind of stretching it.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever. She'll be here soon enough. We can ask her to her face. Yeah. 5 years, really? Come on, you're pulling my leg.
So what'd she say hers was? Like, related to some event or just, like, this reverse kundalini event?
I like that, reverse kundalini. Yeah. The kundalini went down into her toes. They were really all swelled up. She couldn't even wear her favorite Birkenstocks anymore. That was dark night of the soul, man. It was so dark. My toes were swollen with kundalini. I couldn't get my Birkenstocks on or off. Oh, it's dark. You should talk to Adyashanti.
The whole time.
Yeah. Oh, that's bad.
I should visit. I haven't seen her.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's like a good night. It's like a good night out going bowling.
Is she coming here to cuddle?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man hosting?
No.
You gotta start passing off the light work.
Yeah.
Keep yourself out of trouble too.
Well, I told her don't use my name. Just call it, you know, night. Just leave me out of it. Night Sky Sangha, you know, the email address, and that's, you know. Leave me out of it.
I feel kind of nauseous when I look at you, so if you could just leave me out of it.
So one aspect of the geometry of attention, nature of consciousness, the insatiability of consciousness to feel and do and say and eat and assimilate and eliminate and think about shit and feel shit and imagine the future and, you know, dwell in the past and ignore at all costs the textural nature of presence. What? You know, ignore at all costs. the textural nature of present experience. The as a portal to a depersonalization. One can sip from the fountain of depersonalization with, you know, some degree of application, a little bit of elbow grease, right? A little bit of affection, a little bit of interest. Yes, you can benefit from the education of seeing mind, consciousness, texture, sensation, free will, the absence of free will, how they throb as you. Whoa, yeah. And so your attention starts to shift from the content of my imaginary life, be, you know, absolutely self-consuming. Now the attention is opened a little bit, the aperture is opened a little bit, and the capacity or the gift of attention is now actually considering itself. And doing so with some aplomb, with some ease, with some facility. Now, it's not like you need to become silent in order for that to occur. You could say it could actually be the opposite, that awareness starts to consider its own, like, what the fuck is this? And simply by doing that, silence just naturally occurs. Because you're responding texturally, impersonally, to the rhythm of present experience. And so the thirst or craving for objects starts to relax. The thirst and craving to manufacture yourself through mind, through metaphor and anecdote, relaxes. You actually become capable of relinquishing your interest in the imagination of yourself.
Well, it's much better silence than your imagined contrived, you know, deprivation tank or whatever.
That's right. That's right. Some silences are, you could say, practiced or cultivated deprivations, for in hopes of a certain kind of insight to occur. And this is not necessarily anathema to that or mutually exclusive, but the openness itself, one becomes silent. To place any particular value on the presence or absence of silence.
Reflection was just this thing that's happens to appear in the brain. To me, and so, in this case, reflecting on earlier today and a rather automatic way that I was behaving in a meeting.
Yes.
Very me.
Yes, that was me.
That was very me.
Yeah.
But it's totally not me at all. It's just this activity that I sort of see, but I feel like I'm distant from it as well, you know?
Yes.
And so I see it, I see that me as an object.
Yes, know? Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And I think that, you know, I think that sometimes seeing I mean, I'm saying object. I don't know what you want to call it. You know,
that works.
There can be value in that. Actually, to objectify, which I normally don't think is of that much value, you know. But
right.
It seems like in certain things where we believe we're the subject, if you objectify that,
yeah.
If everything's object, then yeah. What is subject?
Uh-huh.
If even that is subject,
yes.
It's object.
Keep going.
Yeah. Right.
That's total trapdoor. Right? Yeah, you never hit the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, then it's like, well, that's
yeah. You know. Right. Mm-hmm. Which as it gains momentum, because things do fall at 32 feet per second per second, right? So it'll start gaining a certain momentum or acceleration, at least with respect to a gravity environment where you fall out of your own sky. Yeah, and now you can't find neither subject nor object.
Yeah.
And, you know, welcome to depersonalization.
You know, there is this disquietude or this discomfort about those recollections. Now, sociological terms or psychological terms.
Yeah.
I feel that I was being true and not trying to fake anything. You know, I was being mm-hmm. real. But I think it is more the fact that it was all content driven. It was dribble. I mean, this whole thing, this whole subject matter is stupid and ridiculous.
Yes.
And there's a certain discontent with consciousness just dealing with that.
Yes.
Relating back and forth to other people about this totally arbitrary
yes.
thing.
Yeah, right.
That we all kind of made up.
Yep. Whether collectively or not.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe somehow.
Yeah.
Certainly in the corporate world.
Right.
And there's a real disquietude about that. And I'm not unsatisfied with my actions. I'm just unsatisfied that I'm dealing with this crap.
That's right. Whatever consciousness is, and thankfully it's nothing at all, as the innate, call it wisdom of depersonalization, gathers a certain amount of, you know, momentum. We could say certain kinds of irritabilities will manifest because it's like this knows better. Not that I know better. This knows better. The breaking through the compulsive nature of personification has occurred more than once, so that it's now, call it, tangible in the way that it's tangible. And then the reanimation, reification, or assertion of content, subjects, and objects becomes gnarly. But yeah. A lot of, anecdotal stories about so-called enlightened people that just couldn't take it anymore. Yeah. Not that that's a necessary path to mimic.
You mean that was sort of the impetus for their...
Well, the impetus, I would say, was the organic, curious process of consciousness decoupling from its own imagination.
Yeah.
And the symptom in the so-called person was, I can't take it anymore. I cannot be a person any longer. I will kill myself. Yeah. Now, of course, you don't hear the stories of the people that actually did kill themselves. Because they never...
Except for this guy that was... He read it on a blog. Yeah.
Oh, well, Wayne, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Wayne didn't... I don't know. I mean, I don't know Wayne well enough. I wish, you know, I would have been happy to fly the fuck to Wyoming, rent a car, and go like, what up, Wayne? You know, what up? But it never happened, unfortunately. But Wayne took his life, if he took his life, not because he couldn't stand not being enlightened, but because by virtue of the gift of enlightenment, if he had that, let's hope he did, and let's hope all of his followers do too, he couldn't stand, you know, some sciatica. And instead of committing himself to a path of, you know, wellness, because he was a veteran and because of all these reasons that I'm broke and I'm this and I don't care enough anymore, I'm going to kill myself. You're like,
I care enough to write this blog.
I care enough to write the blog right. That will publish after I've huffed helium, and then the local authorities will have to pick up my cadaver. Yeah.
Just trying to make his suicide note look more professional, that's all.
I think so. But, you know, we don't have, well, fortunately, we don't have Wayne to kick around anymore. Only his memory.
Only his memory.
He's probably still alive somewhere. He doesn't even have the balls to do it.
Yeah. He might be like Andy Kaufman.
A loser.
Who's still alive somewhere.
Yeah. The ultimate fake.
The ultimate fake out. Yeah.
I'm sure there's people that still think.
Well, Elvis has been spotted in South America. You can't qualify. The cessation of reference. You can't place it in some kind of a hierarchical place where, like, this enlightenment's better than that enlightenment, better than that enlightenment, better than that enlightenment, because I've experienced the handful of so-called enlightenments, and this one's the one that really kicks your ass. And so it's very strange that you could find, discover, or hypnotize, if you want to use that word, any kind of consensus about anything at all, let alone the fine points of so-called self-realization and what it might be. You can't. It happens. I mean, there's no question. You know, there's how many books and how many libraries and how many religions and how many things that are all made out of, right, qualifiers. Brahman and Vishnu and Saraswati and the Ramayana and the Bhagavad Gita and the Ribhu Gita and the Heart Sutra and everything Sam Harris has written. You know, these are all the high end of, you know, spiritual insight. And all of them to a T, no matter how articulate the poetry is, whether it's Rumi or whomever, is a perturbation in a field. When, or accompanying that, is absolute absence lurking around as the appearance of subject and object. When? I mean, it's either fucking this or it's that. Like, no, it's whatever. And there is no boundary or limitation or preference, really, for God, anything at all. I mean, what might happen to a so-called human being so-called depersonalization starts to inform you, and there's an organic, effortless, timeless weaning or relaxation from the habit of objects. The orientation of personalization.
seems that the only thing that you can express with any kind of truth is a negation of myth, or you know, the only thing you can really say is what's not true, right? I mean, in a way, you can't express truth.
Neti Neti's gotten a lot of mileage, and there's all kinds of ways to practice it.
Yeah. And you can weave a tapestry of poetry or whatever.
Here it is.
And you can sort of outline, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But I think so often it has to be based on what's not true.
Well.
So that the truth is just revealed.
If you're pounding, if you're on a milk crate and espousing what things are or aren't, okay. I mean, you might get applause. You might get a tomato. You might get a few dollars in the basket. You might be, you know, invited out to lunch. Chauncey Gardner, you know, got backed into by a vehicle and then became president of the United States, or soon to be. Being there. Right? Chauncey Gardner, the woman's limousine, right? Backed into him, didn't really hurt him, but she whisked him into her life, gave him medical care.
Yeah.
He was an attractive, well-spoken fool, if ever there was a fool, right? And by virtue of his absolute innocence, he rose throughout this, right, 1% culture, meteored to the top, and was being considered, right, for president.
Yeah. Nobody was doing this, making observations.
He liked to watch.
Yeah, that's right.
I liked to watch. And everyone was catharting in his company. Yeah. How strange. But isn't that this? We are all catharting. You could say in the company of that which likes to watch. And it, following the, you know, the inclination of tarot, is the fool, as was Chauncey. Just to put a little Joker hat on it, you know, with little bells on the ends, right? The fool's hat. It's a weave, right? It's an art. As the useless wisdom of depersonalization blossoms and matures, and you become more fond, trusting, nourished by its presence, synonymous with the absence of oneself. Well, a different kind of intelligence, poetry, articulation is lit. And that shows up the way that it shows up when having a, you know, aboriginal circle to speak, wax philosophically about the incomprehensible.
I already don't like this rule that I made.
You got a rule?
That you can only say the only truth is insane. Negatory thing.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I don't like it already. That was quick.
That's gone.
That was a fast catharsis.
Let's negate that rule.
Yeah. You know, in Peter's earlier teachings and emphases, and if he still does it, of course, he just doesn't quite articulate it the same way. He played in those earlier years, experimenting with those of us that, you know, had the privilege of hanging out with him as he was experimenting. right? There was, you know, a certain kind of thrilling emphasis placed on radiant presence and palpable examples of it, experiential examples of it. Yeah. And like anything, you know, that water finds its own level, you know, plays itself out, is, you know, the same kind of emphasis is not placed on that. Though if he were doing, let's say, a retreat or something, he might pull out some of those, you know, magic tricks. And the reason to bring it up is that a lot of yogic literature and practice has the bad ego, bad body consciousness, bad craving and aversion, bad. And he was saying, like, well, fuck that noise. What the fuck is this? Right? So it was a shift from to a very positive, radiant wonderment in relationship to the texture of present experience than making personification evil. Yeah.
It's basically just that Judeo-Christian bullshit of sinner.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the literature you'll find in, you know, anecdotal Buddhist teaching and all that kind of stuff, it consumes or concerns itself with just way too much persona, symptoms of persona. It's easy enough to say, look, we're whacked. Everyone is fucking whacked. No one's going to stop being whacked. Even Ramana Maharshi was whacked. The Shiva Puri Baba was whacked. The Shiva Bali Yogi was whacked. You know, line them up. Whacked.
Might as well go with whatever.
So yeah. then the portal, the wormhole that opens turns out to be the luster of present experience. Relaxed and released from slightest pressure to conform or not conform, to become or not become. Just take the whole human meme off the table. Whacked? Fine. Let's move on. Otherwise, you end up in the clutches of an Adam Chaxfield or a Jeannie Zandi or, you know, some other master of, you know, persona catharsis. You just stay whacked.
And just end up shopping.
Or then going to a forgiveness workshop with Byron Katie, and then you go see Tanya, and then you go see Maggie, and then you go see, and then you go see, and then you go see, and you see, you keep, you know, checking off all of these so-called love, Adyashanti, and blah, blah, blah. You keep checking all of the stuff off, and it means nothing. Look, this is whacked. All right. Wow, boy, that just took years and dollars off of my spiritual dance card. Because the maturity that occurs, needs to occur, if you want to place a value judgment on it, is the capacity to drop, release, relinquish the idea of personal continuity. Not right now, not at the end of the workshop, but right here in the ordinary rhythm of the workaday life, right? Because, you know, here in the West, we don't see all that many people renouncing, and even those that do renounce are renouncing in one kind of institution or another. Wayne kind of renounced, ended up, you know, by a lake in Wyoming, the sciatica came on, you know, that was that.
It's also like if Peter used to also say, like, how likely is it that you're going to be a firefighter? Like, none. Not likely at all. You know what I mean? Like, how likely is it that I'm going to renounce a bunch of things?
Yeah.
Sober? Like, no.
No.
It's not likely. It's not going to happen, like, anytime soon. So you might as well just jump right in there.
It was terrible hanging out with Prahlad Brahmachari. At the same time, it was... I mean, sociologically speaking, anthropologically speaking, it was a gold mine. I mean, spiritually speaking, it was a gold mine. I was too young to appreciate it, you know, then. I probably am still too young and stupid even to appreciate it now. But it was also terrible because it was like, I can't become anything that you are. None of it. You know, either the yoga, the renunciation, the magical powers, the I mean, like, I got nada.
Nope.
I got nothing.
You're like, no, I'm just going to go get a snack.
I got to get out of here. That was nice hanging out, and I love you a lot. You're weird. And but I got to get out of here. You know, I got a lot of living to do. I've got to go, you know, expend my enzymes. and you know, what, you know, and he was like, you're young, you know, go spend, yeah, you know, spend, go ahead, take your enzymes on the road. I mean, the encounter was, it wasn't premature because it occurred, but there was, was really up against it. And it was a quite a relief, if I can be a little biographical, it was quite a relief when, I think it was Ramesh Balsekar showed up on the scene. Householder,
yeah.
Wife, children, president of the Bank of India, a very attractive weightlifter when he was a younger man. And there he was, enlightened as fuck. And I was like,
I could do that.
It's closer. It's a little bit closer than it was hanging out with Prahlad, who was impossible in every respect. Yeah. And you know, Jean Klein showed up. It's possible. Ordinary guy.
Ordinary guy.
Musicologist. You know, went to study Sanskrit in India, ran into an awakened Sanskrit teacher, and the teacher said to him, do you know yourself? Jean was like, I think I knew myself. No, do you know yourself? Right? And you're like, whoa, that really opened it up. Then when you see, then if you see like, you know, a bumbling alcoholic fool like Wayne Lickerman, wake up, you're like, boy, this is getting closer. It's getting closer.
Can I do this?
I mean, a real dickhead. I mean, a lovable, you know, wonderful, crazy dickhead. And you're like, it's getting a little closer.
Moving the goal closer.
Yeah, the goal. Yeah, I was like, I might have a chance at this. Who knows? Who knows? Because, I mean, my resources, you know, my resources and my commitment were, you know, it was terrible. Yeah, and then you're, then, you know, down the road, da-da-da-da-da, this and that. Then you run into an Asperger's guy. You know, ugh. You run into Peter Brown, you know, totally Aspergered up. Talking about, you know, lofty topics like, you know, Kashmiri Shaivism or Dzogchen or Western occultism and your standard kind of, you know, esoteric Buddhist fare in absolutely Western terms. Better than Krishnamurti could pull off.
Yeah.
And you're like, geek.
Geek.
Geek. I can do this. Fucking geek. Yeah.
Interesting mantra he gave you, but
yeah, yeah. It just, I mean, right? It's hard to tell what's, you know, what's maturing in you, what's occurring, who you run into, the teaching, the timbre, the circumstances, the weird karmic twist of it all, and you know, something just kind of like clicks in, and you're like, I don't know how, but this somehow is making a little more sense to me than ever before. Then if you find that you can be so bold, let's say, to wave your hands in the air just the way you want to and feel and speak and find the body of metaphors that turn you on, well, now you're fucking Rumi. Yeah, you're roomified. And, you know, that doesn't mean anything's happened to you at all.
There's something.
Something.
Something clicked.
Something.
Not clicked. Something broke.
Something just keeps, I mean, something just keeps opening. And the visitations of depersonalization are, well, what? Is there a singular event after which, you know, you need someone to feed you?
That'd be horrible. I don't even like people anywhere.
That's right. You'd like, better off. No. Yeah, you're better off hanging on to just enough self-determinism so you don't have to be bothered by anybody. Yeah. Yeah. Well, knowing you would be a terrible insult for you to have to become dependent upon others even to eat. What's happened to Francine? She's pretty fucking out there, man. We better feed her. She's not going to like it, but it's her tough luck.
Leave a plate.
Yeah, really. And then she throws shit at you from the window. Really.
No, if I could throw stuff, I could feed myself.
It's horrible.
So, right, come on.
You know, after a sweet event, sitting around talking about the nature of things and having questions asked and answered and grooving on this shit, da 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 da. You know, you go to Wawa. You know, you catch up on your email. So the rhythm of, you know, the sweetness of depersonalization. The nourishing quality of neti on the neti neti weaves its way into the rhythm of the so-called practical life, the worldly, right, affairs and obligations and responsibilities and rhythms of your.
The motivation that changes, though, in your so-called personal life and everyday life, it seems that the motivation is there are things that are sort of kicked away, you know. I mean, certainly my motivation is less
yes.
and different than it used to be. And hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah. Whether you're hit by a bus or not. Yeah. Yeah. The presence, evidence of whatever realization might be is exactly this. Now, the reflex of someone associated with mind and metaphor and cosmology will particularize and go in search of evidentiary basis for thinking that enlightenment is something, right? But as you like see, oh fuck me, this isn't something. It might not be nothing, but it's not really something. And so the reflex to convert whatever this is into a reference field relaxes. And you don't have to sustain that. You know, you don't have to, like, there's no effort to let's say, occupy or reach or flip a switch on a certain condition and then sustain, because that would again trigger the, right, the mystery and misery of subject and object. Here this is. And if there's this, you know, lovely relaxation from having to derive anything from experiencing, there goes self. Fucking gone. No need, no reflex impulse to manufacture, to derive, to name, complain, exhort, extort, exhume. Relaxed from objects and relaxed even from the, you know, the kind of throbbing nature of subject. There's no impulse remaining to establish the beachhead of self. Other people may have lofty ideas and or vocabulary as concerns consciousness and awareness and, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But you're like, nah. I mean, Rupert Spear is pretty good at articulating, you know, some of the finer points of, you know, call it the vocabulary of non-duality. He's not half bad. But it's like, nah, no, shut up, Rupert, shut up. Just no. It could be way beyond even marvelous that you can't find and no longer define yourself through anything that has occurred to you prior to now. The myth of personal durability and the, right, mind and mind field that likes to fool itself into imagining that it was here prior to now, is gone. I mean, if you need to write a letter, you know, tell your congressman what you think about global warming, you know, you can pull out enough persona to do that. You can pull out enough persona to do, you know, order what you want at the touchscreen at Wawa. And then enjoy it.
Yeah. Do it all the time. Really.
Yeah, do. Yeah. Whew. And even in the midst of all of the magical tools and skills, spells and passes that you're capable of, this, wow, holy shit, you mean nothing happened to me prior to now? That's right. Yeah, no, nothing did. And nothing's happening to you now. You don't have to pound on, you are not the body, you are not the mind. Stop.
gives them too much reality. It's like all of a sudden there's something that's really heavy that you're like some material flesh thing that you're trying to like not be. It's like, what?
Yeah, leave it alone, man. The specter or the appearance of individuation, the filter of
shit what consciousness is doing.
Really? Oh, yeah. Consciousness is like, let me tell you all about myself. I'm having my morning coffee.
Talk to a muggle. You're like, really, all right.
Talk to the hand. I need a cup of coffee before I'm happy to talk to you. See, this is the thrilling and excruciating myth of personification that churns out imaginary evidence without pause, without shame. To make it appear as if you are actually mind, body, born, personified, feeling, entitled, fucked up, and need to heal.
Really just seems to like novelty. So it will create any kind of imaginary, stabilized state because it loves to discover like something like, ooh, it's something different. Like, even though it's the same, it's just like a bizarre, like, all right.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a Fletcher boat. What the fuck am I gonna
do? What's interesting, I would suggest, is that you will find a rich, remarkable infinity of novelty in objects and subject. And you'll find, dare I say, an equal facility of novelty that's absolutely object-free.
Right.
That's the dance. Consciousness is like, dude, I love novelty. I don't care if I find it in the field of objects and identification, and therefore shame and blame and responsibility and winning and everything else that accompanies the shit field of personal durability.
Right.
Or it finds...
just has like kind of patterns and mechanisms, but doesn't necessarily have any regard for content or where it goes with it.
Yeah, it's off. That's right. And if you're not whatever you're not, and if all you are is, well, without trying to objectify it or make it too solid, novelty itself, you're the field, or you could say the awareness of the field in which novelty, right, blossoms.
Right, and actually like discovering, not that it's actually a discovery, but discovering that there is what the hell did we just use this? I'm like so bad with memory lately. Like mid-sentence, I'm like... no, but...
Something else like that.
Like a texture and dynamism outside of the human realm, discovering that appears novel at first, you know, and so then, but then there's more novelty in that arena, in that direction, that veers off from the human. But it just keeps spinning.
It's like the trap door of, right, releasing from object and releasing from subject. And what's seeing what? And is there actually something durable behind the so-called seeing of whatever there is to be seen that can refer to itself as either an object or a subject? And it just keeps going... because there's no scrim.
Yeah, I'm hearing the crickets, and I'm conscious of hearing the crickets. And it's like, there you go again, really. Yeah. Because I'm not just hearing the crickets.
You're a cricket.
I'm hearing crickets. Crickets are out there, and I'm here, and I'm hearing them.
Right. No. You know? Right. Nice.
It's like, okay, so where are we now? You know, is there...
Yes.
Can I sense the whole wonder field? All at once.
Absolutely. Yes. That's what novelty is. Depersonalization is the dawning, revelatory dawning of absolute inclusion in the midst of non-specificity. What? But, I mean, that's, you know, if there's an essence to so-called non-duality, that would be, holy shit. And so that reflex of naming and grasping, insisting on implication or genesis of any kind, right? It's not operating. And so the sense of self as time, self as durability, no. Without refusal, without neti-neti, with, right? Really, no effort at all. No effort at all. This reveals itself to itself as, call it, streaming novelty. And that former sense of, let's call it the durability or physicality of either the object or the subject, no.
Yeah, you just keep going deeper and deeper into streaming novelty.
Yeah. Yes, you die.
Like you've crossed the event horizon in the black hole and you're just going.
Yep, you've crossed the event horizon. Now you're just falling straight through cruising. Novelty. Yeah.
Cruising through novelty.
Yeah, that's right. Surfing. Surfing, cruising through as novelty. And that is, Ramesh used the word unicity. Because you're not stopping off for coffee at the object shop. You're not gassing up at the subject stop. There's no breaks. There's no clinging. There's no grasping. There's no taking any prisoners. Because you don't care about objects. And you don't care about the so-called subject. So they say. Right. Well, the important thing is, right, the fun, the game plan is, rather than attempting to assert or hypnotize or lay out, you know, a hierarchy of whatever, it's more fun that this is direct encounter, this is you, this is this, and you don't need a cosmology, an explanation, an on-ramp, nothing, because you're done. You graduated from what? I don't know. You can't even remember what you thought you were once were.
And it doesn't bother you.
No. That's right.
You don't care about yourself. That's like, I didn't see that part coming.
Now, we can appreciate from the inertia of being someone, if I were to start dousing with novelty, you know, the contrast could be either thrilling, like I'm telling everybody I'm enlightened, I got to put up a new website, you know, or not. Terror. Sure, any manner of reflex or response to depersonalization can show up. One becomes, I don't know, a little more casual and acquainted with then, right? It doesn't have to be so demonstrative. Who are you going to convince of this? Who are you going to convince of this? Fuck, that's not going
to
happen.
Why would you care to even you, really put forth that much effort?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you do, that's great.
If you do, that's great. That's
good,
right.
For you.
If you can make a living, that's even better.
I mean, that's what makes it so, this, what we do, so pure. But, and, I mean, really,
an interesting way to describe it. I just got your chest, I get what you're saying. Not a lot of window dressing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't use the word pure,
white
though.
Bliss, so, yes.
Just fucking pure white bliss, man. Nice guy, Sangha. Pure white bliss. It's a suppository of pure white bliss.
I hope it's an LSD spot.
You know, when I
pure white bliss, I'm in.
You know, I'm gonna dial that in.
You're so crazy with, you know, some of these things that I went into. You know.
Note to self: beware of muggles.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine, he's been a preacher and all that his whole life, and he just kind of wants to help people, you know. And when there's avenues to go deep, he'll go deep until somebody says, "Hey, wait, whoa, what about this? What about that?" You know, and you know, he won't do it. He's so willing to help.
Yes.
That he won't set the example.
Uh-huh, right.
You know, so he's going to help them in their difficulties.
Sure.
And he is helping them in a way.
I hope so.
But the potential seems to be there, you know. And it's like, come on, live the potential.
Mm. Yes. Yes, similar tones.
Just how you refer to your alter ego.
Yeah,
that's really it's
me. That's right, Francis, the pink bunny.
My friend Jennifer, she does these things, I
tried to tell her you're smoking too much pot.
You'll be talking and like
she just blew me off.
You just like forget what you're saying. You know, I told her.
Jen, listen to me. You're lighting up.
Sounds like more and more real.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, there's nothing. Maybe he should come here, you know, for fun. Maybe not.
Find out. Yeah. Oh, I've talked to him about it. He's seen videos and all that jazz and read the stuff.
Well, then he knows to stay away.
Yeah, he's not going to come if you gave a preview.
It's
too late for that.
No, it's too late.
I know, maybe like that. Sometimes I do that. I'm like, oh, check out the website first. And you're just like, no, just come. It's a great spiritual gathering.
Oh, it is. Super. It's bliss, white light. It's a great spiritual gathering. There's probably like,
it
might be cookies even.
Yeah. Sometimes we have snacks and it's like just great spiritual uplifting group. Come.
Yeah.
Be a lot of fun. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, we would. We would love to have you.
If you bake.
For lunch.
Feel free to bring stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. We all bake and bring stuff. Oh, you're the only one that showed up with baked goods tonight.
I really like dark chocolate.
The delight that one can find in objects or subject, sensuality, sentimentality, spiritual visioning, emptiness, call it what you will. All of that delight, you could say, is real. Okay. Yeah. But as you keep falling or zipping down back wherever, then even the reliance, let's say, or the fondness of sipping bliss from objects, boy, that starts to go. And then you're like, you're not sipping bliss from objects anymore. You're not sipping bliss from what you're going to do with or about yourself in an imaginary future. And you know, you call it a revelation if it's the revelation of something by someone. No. You naturally wean yourself from sipping bliss from objects. You've heard the word, of course, we all have, of revelation or something. But even that becomes absurdly moot. And then this is, and then as this has always been, if there has been an always been, and I don't think there has been an always been. To say there's been an always been is a tall order. There's just, if you want to say this has always been, knock yourself out. But now you sound like Neil Degrassi or somebody.
Where are you?
What do you mean this has always been? Okay.
Quit making stuff up.
Yeah, that's right. You're like, this has always been. Thanks for sharing. I don't really give a fuck. Okay, this has always been. You're like, you're not sipping bliss from objects anymore, and it's just all in. You want to put a timestamp on it? Knock yourself out.
Mine was like 10 cards, you know.
Clock get out in. My animal cards.
Clock out, clock in.
Clock in.
Clock out.
Clock out. I want to be the badger. There is the possibility, if there's the presence of absolute freedom from reference. And it is possible for someone who's got a natural proclivity for a little bit of adventuresomeness to discover it. And it's absolutely nourishing. So even the, you know, the thirst or the insistence on something as lofty as enlightenment, Jesus, even that starts to just relax. Because you're not in a condition that needs to be remedied by the idea of...
You've outgrown that idea completely.
You've
it's
outgrown.
Like a little kid, you're like, oh, that was cute. Oops. Yeah.
Oh, you guys are into enlightenment? Hey, that's cool. Yeah, I was too for a while.
Yeah.
Now you're getting scary. Yeah. Now you're dangerous.
Let's see a little sliver here.
Chat room. Hey, thanks for joining us, everyone. 9:29. I'm sure you've had enough of me. I certainly have had enough of you. And good night.